Accession number 28411, Reel 4.
Bond for the first time. What was the experience of seeing a dead person that had been
not much. Funnily enough, it's a very hard thing to explain. Not that I've tried to explain to many people, but when we crossed over the border, we had to go into Syria on the 6th of June. It was about dark anyway, probably about 3. Our object was to cut across to the coast and meet up with the 14th Battalion, who was coming in. We were, say, 2 miles inland. Battalion went...
just let the spot of plane go by.
Oh.
Wait a minute. Sorry.
Good God. Okay.
Continue, sorry.
14th Battalion went straight up the coast. You know, the water was literally alongside them. Hmm. And we went in... I suppose about a couple of miles further inland. It may have been 5 or 6, but it wasn't that far. And we had to... There was a little village up there. The name escaped me. 14th went up there, and we were to go across there because there was some French in there somewhere. And Jim McKenzie, who should have got, in my opinion, got some sort of a declaration. He was told, he was a corporal then, to pick 2 blokes and go, and there's a wire running from there down to Vichy, telephone wire from the French. I don't know how they knew about it. Go in there and cut it by whatever time we were going in, so they, one couldn't communicate with the other. And Jim McKenzie went in there with, I think one of the blokes had a rifle, Tommy gun. I don't know what Jim had, and the other bloke had a machete, isn't it? What do you call those things? Big long blade.
Machete,
that's the word. To cut in there. So he went in there, and they did it. And he found his way back to the battalion. That was a purely a compass exercise. At any rate, we ran into, half an hour after we crossed the border, we ran into a machine gun nest. And that was the first, wasn't much of an action, but it was the first time. And Chaplain Paddy Connolly, the first fatality in the battalion, got killed. Well, you know, I saw Paddy get hit, and he was certainly killed. I don't remember any adverse reaction or anything. It was just half expected, I suppose. I don't know. It's hard to describe, really. I mean, when we got to the Latani River, our company was right on the where the river ran into the coast, into the ocean. And the rest of the battalion was further up. There was a bridge, of course, which was bombed. We had to go across the river there. A company, I think one of the companies was in reserve. And all the frogs were lined up on there. I mean, all they had to do was line up machine guns like that. And, of course, you had to run into it. And while this was going on, and we lost down on the beach. We probably got 5 or 6 in our company killed. I can remember that quite clearly. And, you know, it was... I can't tell if there's any reaction. I really don't.
For me, I would have thought if I was, regardless of how much training I have, the very first time I saw someone literally being shot would have been a very...
certainly don't forget it. But
jarring experience.
Not really. You know, the first time you wade into some bloody lead flying around, you sort of just... think of what you've got to do and where to look for the bogus and say, well, I was surprised myself a bit because everyone wonders what it's like to go into action first up. And I don't think, there's no special feeling, I certainly can't pass that on, but it's a relief to be in it. At least you know that you can do. I think the main thing is everyone, I was, I'd be no exception, of frightened of not manning up. That's really the thing that you could stand up to. After the first stash, I know I was relieved to find that I was, you know, not that he's still there, but I'd nothing, you know, I didn't run away, if you like.
Yeah. People talk of being concerned that they would lose their bottle in action and sort of...
lose their what
lose
bottle?
Lose their bottle.
Bottle. Water bottle?
No.
Oh, I see. Courage, yeah. Yep.
Lose their courage, yep. And have their, sort of let their team down.
Yep.
So they worry beforehand, in action, they haven't got time to think.
No.
And then afterwards they they might sort of collapse with sort of exhaustion or something.
Not really, no. Maybe inwardly. No, I don't think so. No one's exhausted. You're bloody relieved to still be visible, I can tell you that. I don't. It was on to the next one. See, there's a day or two before we, after Latani, to want to Sidon, where the French had retired to. I think we've eventually got out of some trucks. We didn't march all the way. No, I don't recall anything like that. But what I do know, which may be of interest, is that whilst we're on Latani River and attacking to get over, the French Navy had about, not the French Navy, British Navy had one or two, I don't know whether they were frigates or destroyers or what, they weren't anything bigger than a destroyer, and they were to land some British commandos on the other side of the river, which is the Vichy side, to give us, go in behind their lines and give us support, because we had no, we just had to head down, arse up to get over the river, no other way. And also, those destroyers, whatever they were also to drop a barrage from their guns. Well, now, they dropped the barrage while we were out in that fighting thing. But what happened was that all those commandos were supposed to be dropped on the other side of the river from us, landed right in amongst us. And one of them was a chap by the name of Major Keyes, who later got a VC. He got a VC up the desert. He was a colonel then. His father was an admiral in World War I. Anyway, he was the commander. And they landed right in amongst us, you know, they stuffed it up. And they're all in Scottish kilts. And I might add a little funny story. It was a pretty hot day. And we were behind bloody sand hills trying to give covering fire to, we had a boat, we had to go. I was giving covering fire to these blacks. And in came these commandos, about 10 in the morning, complete stuff up. And one bloke came rushing over and dropped in front of us, really, here to that couch, I suppose, and plopped on the ground, and because he didn't have anything under his bloody kilt. And his crown jewels hit the hot sand. He's moved pretty quickly, I can tell you.
So you've got commandos in kilts,
yep.
Being dropped in the wrong place.
Yep.
Sounds a bit like a Spike Milligan plot to me.
Well, it happened. And the boss, the CO of the landing crowd was this Major Keyes, very unassuming bloke with glasses, and he's the one that got the VC up the desert. Well, this bloke is nuts. The kilt came up here, and his nuts hit the bloody hot sand. I'll tell you what, that moved him. So who says they wear anything under their bloody kilts? I asked the bloke once, do you really have anything under your bloody kilts? He said, yeah, bagpipes. Which shut me up, I tell you. Set of bagpipes. Which is true. Yeah. Anyway, we got across the river, and it was then we went out in that fighting patrol on the that night. And the Brits weren't that clever in that bombard either. They weren't drop shots, but they weren't going where they should have gone. A bit close to us. I think it was probably after that. Probably, yes, I think it would have been, that we went out in that fighting patrol. And the battalion got across through Alan Hattie. Have you mentioned him before, Alan Hattie? No. Oh, he's a very well-known bloke in our battalion. We reckon he should have got two VCs. One of them was at Litani River. They tried to get across the river and they couldn't, of course, it's just a dead duck. Head down, ass up, most of the poor bugs were wounded or killed, that was A Company. And then they decided that they'd try to get it's a very fast growing from the snow, from the, whatever those mountains are called. And you couldn't just swim across. No way, you'd be killed anyway. At any rate, Harry volunteered to take a rope over so that the blokes could get in a boat, which sounded pretty stupid, but however, he swam across with this rope, started there and finished down there, but he got across. It wasn't hit, they tried to. Tied the rope. I don't know whether he came back again or not, but it was through Alan Hattie doing that that his company, which is Don Company, got across and got a foothold. I think we had second, third machine gunners giving us support, and they had machine guns. Anyway, Hattie, I'm sure he didn't even get a mention. Not only a mention, dispatches. We even should have got a VC, but anyway, that was by the by. So they got across there. We got across down by the coast and cleaned up the frogs. Well, they retired, actually. They pissed off back to Sidon. And on Friday the 13th, we attacked Sidon. And to come into Sidon, you had to go through paddocks as bare as that. They were field paddocks, you know. I suppose they were farming. I don't know. I don't remember that. With a lot of orchards around them. They hid themselves in the orchard. And they have 75mm guns. They're about the same size, I believe, as our 25-pounders. And we approached in line like that. And so did Don Company, and there was, I don't know who was there, whatever company it was. And that road was coming down there. We were this side. Someone was there, the Don Company was there, and one in reserve. Anyway, we had to walk into this barrage. And that's where I got blown up. When you see these bloody things exploding and coming towards us, all that jazz. And this damn thing dropped, I don't know how close it was. I was knocked out. I just remember I thought my tongue was blown out. I didn't get any bodily damage. And the next thing I know, I ended up in the RAP, Regimental Aid Post, and next thing I was on a train, hospital train, and I had 3 weeks in Gaza Hospital, number one.
You're talking about sort of literally marching in line, that sort of harks back to literally the sort of do or die thing. No question, okay, well, you line up and start walking into the gunfire. How does one sort of steel oneself to allow yourself?
Look, you do the same. I'm no bloody hero, but I mean, you just did it. When you're in service, it's the Brits are even worse than Australians. They just did everything they were told. We did mostly what we were told. And perhaps you acted on your own initiative. Went to Rose, but I mean, you just had to do it. There's no, again, if you didn't, you'd be letting everyone down and black marking your conscience, really. You just had to do it, but there's no other way you could do it.
People do say that, you know, the Australians did have this familiarity with their officers, didn't they? In a situation like that, I would have thought someone would pipe up and say, oh, come on, Sarge.
Oh, no, you can't do that. Oh, no. Oh, it was a battalion exercise. Poor bloody sergeant had nothing to do with it. But, you might, that bloody, who was O'Keefe was our jungle? Can't remember who was our, they got rid of him pretty quickly.
So you wouldn't object in any circumstance to a situation that you were being led into or ordered into?
No, well, just part of war, really. a bit like the blacks in World War One, get up the Ararat trenches, head down, arse up, although we were not running towards them. It's just all part of the deal, really. It's the same as the poor blacks in Greece and Crete, and Tobruk out and patrol, and whatever the... I mean, that was that little side show at Sidon, and going across that field would have only been a fraction of what those blacks in World War One had to do. That were awful. But I often think, how the hell they steel themselves to get out of trench and do that. But that's what you had to do, and that's what we did, because there's no... we didn't have any Air Force there to help us. We had 25-pounders. Funnily enough, I can't remember what sort of support they gave us, but they certainly had 75mm, the French, and they had quite a few of them. I mean, it wasn't just a wall of damn things, but they could see that these things hitting the ground in front of us, and I either fortunately or unfortunately got close enough to go over my head, I think, while I got to a shower of dirt and knocked out. I wasn't knocked out for long.
What, obviously, waking up, realising what had happened, how did you feel? You thought your tongue had been blown out.
Yeah, right? I remember that. That's the only recollection I've got, and a shower of dirt. But it must have gone all over my head, I think. I remember them looking at my ears to see if it was bleeding, which they weren't. And they sent me off, put me on a train, and, you know, I was, by the time I got down to about Haifa down that way somewhere, I was on the way to Gaza, as it turned out, I felt I could have gone back to the battalion. But I ended up in Gaza. I was there for 3 weeks in hospital, and then I had about another 10 days in a convalescent camp, a place called Car Victim, and there were a whole lot of troops there, including a few of our blokes, same thing as me, recovering and going back.
So you mentioned there were a lot of bludgers.
In a convalescent camp. Well, I don't know to what extent, but I remember in the canteen at night, I met a bloke from New South Wales, and he was an out-and-out, what we would term a bludger. He had no intention of, I don't know where he was in there for an ingrown toenail or something, he had no intention of getting back to his unit, or he'd work it somehow or other. And there were a lot of those blokes there that were, and they were no good to you anyway.
Were you determined to go back to your battalion?
Well, I didn't. Well, it just never occurred to me not to, really. I don't know where I'd gone. Unless I'd made B class, and I wasn't, of course. Oh, no, I just wanted to get back there as quickly as I could.
To your mates?
Two of my friends, and, you know, the rest of it's all strange to me. It was home. Oh, no, I'd never, until you mentioned it, I was never anything else but going back. I felt a little bit guilty that I wasn't back there before that, because I didn't think I was concussed, but I didn't think I was that, you know, 4 weeks.
People talk of the sort of fear of being killed, but the greater fear, I understand, is being wounded.
No way. Oh, no, no. If you can get what they used to call a blighty in World War One, you know, you get a flesh wound and get home to Blighty, which was England in those days, you're laughing. And, I mean, in the infantry, we had one that I know of. There may have been one or two others that went right through with the battalion and never got wounded. Now, you'd either get... In the infantry, as far as I'm concerned anyway, as I see it, you either got killed or you got wounded. And if you got wounded and you weren't too smashed around, well, you were bloody lucky. Because that happened to me later on in New Guinea. Mm. I got a wound, I was kicked out. And I thought, well, thank God I'm back in the CV Street and I'm still here. you know, we got out of it. No, I never worried about that. But some of them got dreadful wounds, you know, limbs. And this Alan Hattie in Syria, bullet went in there and out there, had two dimples. And I said to him later on, Alan, what did it feel like that getting smacked through there? He said, oh, I cleaned out the antrum pretty well and like a good kick in the face, and that was it. I mean, you know, I got a gunshot wound down there in Syria, in New Guinea, and just carved the flesh.
Just below your eye? Yeah.
Just there. Well, you know, it was, sure. I presume, it would have, it couldn't have come from there. And the first I knew about was blood running down here. So, you know, they're wounds, really. Mm. If you hit a bone and it all goes through your tummy or your lung, well, it's not so good.
In relation to going into Syria, and you mentioned having put your floppy hat on.
Yep.
I understand that it was also believed if you made a good pot of coffee and smoked your cigarettes going, and that the French would sort of look on you as old allies.
That. I hadn't heard of that. But
get out your goulwar.
No, I hadn't heard of that, but that was the story of the French, slouch hat. Here come the Australians, and they're one of us, and they're on our side, but that didn't happen at all. No, they fought for the Germans, all right. They fought very, very hard and strongly. They were pretty good soldiers. And you read out from that book that they had 2.5 divisions or something, was it? I didn't realise they had that many there. Well, they didn't bloody well fight that hard, if that's the case.
They had air support. What was it like to be?
No airplanes at all. I don't remember seeing a single airplane. And we didn't know, the first time I knew of their artillery was Sidon. I don't remember any of them all at the time.
Well, you mentioned an experience you had with tanks.
Yeah, that was at Sidon.
Tell us that story.
Pardon?
Tell us the story about the tank and pots.
Haven't I mentioned that?
You haven't got it on tape.
Oh, I see. Well,
helping your mate through the barbed wire.
That's right. Yeah. Well, before we went through this barrage of French artillery, we got to an orchard and we were really searching for the French, and then we didn't know whether they were there or the other side. And two of us, Doug Burgess and myself, ended up on this road that ran between us and the ocean, see, and I can't tell you how we became separated, but we weren't sure where the rest of our company was at the time, and we started to walk down the road, which, looking back now, was stupid, because you're exposed. We should have either been in the, I don't know why we're on the road, but we were, and there was a bend in it, about 1,500 yards up. And round the corner, walking towards us, was Arnold Potts, who was our 2IC, and eventually our CO and then our brigade commander, and his anti-tank officer, who's in charge of the anti-tank platoon. And I think they'd gone up there reconnoitring, as I understand. They're out there in a recce. How they got up there, I don't know, but around they came walking towards, and Burgess and myself couldn't believe our bloody eyes, because we reckoned the bloody French were up there somewhere. And in the distance we could hear a rumble of a tank. We couldn't see it because of the bend in the road. Potts came past us and said good day to us and so forth, and they disappeared, and just about the time they was behind us, this French tank came round the corner, bloody big gun sticking up, and of course Burgess and I, made ourselves scarce pretty quickly, and we had to get through a fence which had must have been barbed wire. I don't know what the top wire was. I got through all right, lucky. Burgess didn't, he got his small haversack, which you carried with your tuck in it, got caught in the barbed wire and he couldn't get through. This bloody tank was rumbling on with dead certainty fire on us. And I had to come back and unhook him. And I'll tell you what, he'd just about dug a 10-foot hole under his feet, trying to get through and so forth and so on. Well, anyway, we unhooked him and got in there. And as far as we know, we got in there. The tank rumbled on past us. Why they didn't fire us, I'll never know. But it was a pretty hectic minute or two that we got that bloody thing unhooked.
And you describe it in a way that it sounds almost comical.
Well, looking back, it was comical. I mean, if it fired us, well, I wouldn't have been here to tell you, probably. But it was comical looking back because, God, he was, you know, pretty
hot.
Oh, absolutely. And I had to go back because I'd got through and I was POQing into the orchard, which is an orange orchard, and I had to come back and unhook him.
Maybe the French were laughing too much.
Well, they could have. I'd never thought from their angle, but they didn't shoot. Why? I don't know. Perhaps they weren't close enough. Oh, I don't know. They probably wouldn't have wasted it. Whatever.
People do talk of this, you know, it's all to do with luck.
Absolutely. No question of that. Luck. You can't even make your own luck, really, not like other things. But, no, it's a luck. I mean, that. She luckily, you know, another would have gone in through this, you know. Oh, it's luck. I mean, you don't know how many miss, of course. Near misses.
What about you, firing? You talk of, we talk of people going away to
We didn't have any close-in fighting. We gave covering fire, but you're only firing at a position. New Guinea is a different thing, because it was very close-in fighting, and you don't see many enemy because of the jungle and the trees and the foliage and so forth. But you know they're there.
Before you went away, did you ever think of what it might be like to go away and kill the king in country?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, but you only think about it.
Did you think you would be up to it? I mean,
never entered my head. I don't know, but you come back to the thought of it's either him or me. I mean, you wouldn't stop and think, oh, this is not fair, you know. It's just a matter of survival, really. But we didn't have actually, certainly in Syria, we didn't have that. Mm. I don't know what happened to Damour. I wasn't there. It was a similar situation to Latay, and it was the last stand for the frogs there. But I don't think, I certainly haven't heard of any bayonet charges at Damour. There weren't any before then.
You mentioned Jim McKenzie, yep. And Peter Salmon, who we both have on tape. We have both.
Yeah.
Keith Norrish, we also have.
Now, Keith?
Do you recall Keith?
I didn't know Keith till after the war. He arrived in the Middle East as a reinforcement. I think he joined us just before Syria, I believe, so I'm not sure of that. And I don't know anything of Keith in Syria. I didn't know him at all. He's another company. He got wounded pretty early on in Syria. New Guinea. So I didn't know Keith till after the war, really. Didn't know anything about it.
You wanted to talk to us about your experiences following your time in hospital.
Yes, I was sent to a convalescent camp just south of Haifa. I was there for 10 days. And rejoined the unit in Beirut, where my company, C Company, was established in some French, Vichy French barracks called Joffre, J-O-F-F-R-E, I think it was. And we were very comfortable there, right alongside the Beirut race club, which we went to occasionally. Our main duty after the peace was declared in Syria, was to repatriate the Vichy French back to Marseille. And we had to mainly be on guard duty down on the wharf while they actually boarded the Vichy French, I suppose the ships are French ships anyway.
What was it like seeing your...
Pardon?
What was it like seeing...